Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your host, Diana, here with you every Saturday to bring you the news and top stories from the Military Times, your independent news source about your military. Now let's begin with the article titled, U.S. Army Commissioned Second Cohort of Tech Executives into Innovation Unit. As the U.S. Army races to modernize for warfare that is increasingly defined by autonomous systems and artificial intelligence, it is recruiting some of the country's most influential technology leaders into uniform. The Army this week added three more technology executives into the Executive Innovation Corps, more commonly known as Detachment 201, a newly created unit intended to bridge the gap between the commercial sector and the military. Dane Necht, the Chief Technology Officer of Cloudflare, Sam Pulara, the Managing Director and Chief Technology Officer of Sutter Hill Ventures, and Sircon Piantino, the co-founder of Facebook AI Research and former Vice President of Products at Reddit, were commissioned into the Army in a Wednesday ceremony. The trio was commissioned by Army Secretary Dan Driscoll at Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall, Virginia. They are the second batch of leaders to join the unit, which was launched in June 2025 with the direct commissioning of four executives. Piantino said the program offers technology leaders a chance to apply their expertise to pressing military issues. As the character of warfare evolves, the armed forces must rapidly adapt to new domains and prepare for continued technological change, he said in an Army statement. Those who have the experience to contribute to that mission have a duty to offer their service. Detachment 201 was created to allow senior tech leaders to help the Army innovate by serving as advisors in the reserves. The first cohort included Lieutenant Colonels Shyam Sankar, Chief Technology Officer for Palantir, Andrew Bosworth, Chief Technology Officer of Meta, Kevin Weil, former Chief Product Officer of OpenAI, and Bob McGrew, advisor at Thinking Machines Lab and former Chief Research Officer for OpenAI. The Army said the first group's guidance included assistance on munitions supply chain data analysis, organic industrial base investments, and foundational strategies for autonomous systems and counter-drone technologies. The detachment's ranks have increased, the Army said, as the service has revamped its direct commissioning program by cutting the onboarding timeline from more than 18 months to around 6. The new system makes it easier for technology leaders to serve without leaving civilian jobs, according to the service. And speaking of AI and technology in the military, this next article reads, Ukraine's defense AI chief predicts new paradigm of warfare. Warfare in Ukraine and beyond faces a paradigm shift in the coming years as artificial intelligence systems integrate into unified networks that speed up decisions on the battlefield, a senior Ukrainian official said. Ukraine, in the fifth year of fighting a full-scale Russian invasion, is already using AI for a plethora of battlefield functions, from flying drones at targets to helping plan combat operations and crunching data on Russian missile attacks. AI will form a new paradigm of warfare. It's already actively doing so. Daniil Svak, the head of the Defense Ministry's AI Center, told Reuters. He predicted AI systems would eventually be unified into a single network overseeing the battlefield, leading to a war of operating systems with Russia in the next 3 to 5 years if the conflict continues. The system that possesses more data and better understands that data proposes solutions. That system will gain the advantage over the other, he said. The center was founded in March as Defense Minister Mykhailo Fedorov seeks to put AI and data-driven decision-making at the heart of Ukraine's defenses. Drones, still mostly flown by pilots, have already upended the way the war is being fought. Ukrainian and Russian troops launched thousands of unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs, a day at each other. Kiev is also trying to solve its frontline troop shortage with ground robots. The ability of drones to constantly surveil the battlefield and hit targets with precision has accelerated the, quote, kill chain. the process of planning and executing a strike on the enemy. AI decision-making would speed up this even more, Zvok said. Technological arms race. Ukraine, whose military numbers around 1 million personnel, is already using AI tools in its command systems. But Zvok said the goal was to create a single operating system to recommend battlefield decisions all the way up from the individual frontline units to strategic command. This would significantly speed up the analysis of data from the 1,200-kilometer or 750-mile front line to allow recommendations to human commanders, he said. The aim, Zvok said, is to unite weapons and data systems into, quote, one single living organism that can operate in a coordinated manner. The technological arms race launched by Europe's largest war since World War II, which lasted from 1939 until 1945, has attracted interest from foreign AI companies hungry for combat data to train their models and the opportunity to test their systems. Some, such as U.S. company Palantir, have provided Ukraine with their systems. Kiev has created Brave One Data Room, a project to share battlefield data with allied countries for training their software. This is the place where you can understand whether your system works, said Zvok, wearing a black t-shirt and jeans. Moscow is also developing its artificial intelligence capabilities. A senior Ukrainian air defense commander told Reuters in April he was concerned by Russia's increasing use of AI in planning drone and missile attacks on cities, which could significantly reduce the planning time for each strike. The question is, Zvok said, how quickly we build our solutions and how practically we apply them and achieve the primary impact on the battlefield from our side. He added that the defense ministry was developing an AI-driven recruitment and HR system as part of Fedorov's push for data-driven reform of the vast government department. Ukraine operates on the principle of having a human in the loop on combat decisions, but Zvok said AI systems could eventually outrun humans, whose presence would then slow decisions down. Then the question arises, how do we keep up with making decisions that autonomous systems propose? He said. And that's all for that article. Up next from the Pentagon. Pentagon to launch Cyber Mastery Incentive Pay Program. The Pentagon is establishing a multi-layered cyber incentive pay program to boost cyber capabilities as part of the DoD's Project Patriot Pipeline effort. The Cyber Mastery Incentive Pay, or CMIP, initiative is meant to modernize how the department encourages the cyberspace operations forces, the military and civilian units responsible for cyberspace operations, according to a June 10th release. The Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, Anthony Tata, said in the release, "To incentivize our cyber forces and meet both Department of War and Defense industrial base needs, we need to shed legacy incentive models and invest directly in our people serving on the digital front lines. CMIP does this." The CMIP program drops the previous incentive models to a more flexible system that aligns pay with skill set mastery and performance of demanding tasks, the announcement says. The program was developed in 60 days by the CyberCom 2.0 unit. The program will feature two layers, skill incentive pay and special duty pay. Skill incentive pay, or SIP, is considered the foundational layer that rewards an individual for skill level, whether it's basic, senior, or master. Special duty assignment pay, or SDAP, is a monthly incentive for members who perform duties CyberCom deems, quote, exceptionally demanding, and scale their skills by serving in roles such as trainers or more advanced cyber positions. By breaking down the bureaucratic norms of government incentives, this framework enables increased lethality by driving the skills, roles, and duties most vital to mission success. Katie Sutton, Assistant Secretary for Defense for Cyber Policy, who will lead the execution of the program, said in a statement. The pay incentive program is slated to begin October 1st per the release. The announcement did not specify the pay incentive amount for either program level. This initiative follows a recent push from some lawmakers to advance the creation of an independent cyber force military service. A report from two DC think tanks examined how a proposed cyber force could take over the service-like responsibilities that CyberCom is currently expected to perform. However, it would take at least 1 year and $10 billion to stand up the new force. That concludes that article. Up next, U.S. plans major cut to jets, warships, for NATO operations in Europe, the New York Times reports. The United States plans to significantly reduce the aircraft and warships it makes available for NATO operations in Europe. The New York Times reported this on Friday, citing two senior European officials. The decision would limit NATO's ability to launch long-range strikes and conduct surveillance, the report said. The U.S. plan includes cutting the number of F-16 and F-15E fighter jets from roughly 150 to 100, reducing maritime reconnaissance aircraft from 26 to 15, and removing all 8 aerial refueling tanker jets it previously made available to Europe, the report said. The U.S. also aims to redeploy a missile-launching submarine and an aircraft carrier, along with several warships and scores of jets that join the carrier's missions. Adding that, one of two groups of bombers previously assigned for Europe's defense may also be reallocated. NATO spokesperson Allison Hart told Reuters, "Historically, there's been an over-reliance on U.S. forces and capabilities." Adding that, as Europe and Canada invest more in defense and develop greater capabilities, the balance of responsibility can shift. This would strengthen NATO's defense by reducing reliance on a single ally and reflect a broader change happening within the alliance, Hart said in an emailed statement. The U.S. Department of Defense did not immediately respond to requests for comment. The U.S. European Command said in a statement last week that it would right-size its contributions to the NATO force model without providing further details. Reuters reported in May that the U.S. planned to scale back the military capabilities it would make available to its NATO allies during a major crisis. U.S. President Donald Trump's administration has repeatedly accused European governments of underinvesting in their militaries and relying too heavily on U.S. protection, while urging both Europe and Asian allies to boost defense spending to 3.5% of GDP. And that concludes that article. Up next, Army recruiter pleads guilty to stealing the identities of potential recruits for bank fraud. A New Jersey recruiter admitted to stealing the identities of 7 potential recruits in a scheme to fraudulently take out hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans, the U.S. Attorney Office District of New Jersey announced this week. Former Sergeant First Class Jane Crosby, 35, pled guilty to bank fraud and aggravated identity theft in federal court, according to a press release, after using the victim's personal information to apply for $266,000 in loans and credit card accounts and to withdraw money and deposit fraudulent checks. Task and Purpose first reported this on the case Wednesday. Court documents and statements say that between around September and December 2023, Crosby used the prospective recruit's personal information to apply for special credit union accounts intended for future service members, the office said. After creating those accounts without the victim's knowledge, Crosby used their identities for loan and credit card applications and used the accounts for illegal banking transactions. One document said that multiple calls from Crosby's office phone number were made to a credit union, which was not named, where the caller impersonated 2 of the victims while trying to access their accounts. At the time of the scheme, Crosby was assigned to a recruiting station in East Orange, New Jersey, and used would-be recruits' personal documents that included passports, driver's licenses, and social security cards. That recruiter faces up to 30 years in prison and a $1 million fine for bank fraud, as well as an additional 2 years with a maximum fine of $250,000 for the aggravated identity theft. Military Times reached out to the Army to confirm Crosby's current status. Meanwhile, this next article reads, Air Force cites DEI ban in cancellation of wreath-laying honoring women vets. A 28th annual wreath-laying ceremony honoring women troops at a memorial outside Arlington National Cemetery was canceled earlier this month after organizers got word that multiple military services would not participate, with one citing Pentagon and White House guidance prohibiting, quote, events related to cultural awareness months and DEI programs. The cancellation, first reported by Task and Purpose, was announced Wednesday by leaders of the bipartisan Women's Caucus in a press conference outside the U.S. Capitol. Multiple Democratic lawmakers decried the circumstances, saying it was more evidence of attempts by the administration and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth to minimize the service of female veterans. Representative Amelia Sykes, Democrat of Ohio, the caucus co-chair and vice chair of the Democratic Women's Caucus, said, in plain terms, the very women the ceremony was created to honor were pushed out of it. Honoring veterans should not be controversial. Recognizing the service and sacrifice of women who wore our nation's uniform should be one of the easiest things for us to come together around. Yet, because of the decisions made by this administration, we are defending the basic act of honoring women veterans. A staffer for the Democratic Women's Caucus told Military Times that the wreath laying had been canceled June 10th after officials with the Department of the Air Force said they could not attend due to anti-DEI mandates published on January 2025, immediately after the President Donald Trump took office. An Air Force spokeswoman, Ann Stefanik, confirmed to Military Times via email that the Department of the Air Force declined participation in compliance with executive orders and DOW guidance. Officials with the Army and Navy declined to comment, but military sources with knowledge of planning indicated that the services were not coordinated in their response. Sources claim the Navy had been unaware of the event in their invitation to attend, while the Army faced scheduling conflicts related to Army birthday events following a rescheduling of the initial wreath-laying date. The Marine Corps did not respond to a query. The caucus staff member confirmed the event had been rescheduled to June 10th from an earlier May date due to a conflict with votes. They only acknowledged that the Army had citing scheduled issues, but said Army birthday events had never been a problem in the past. A staffer said, the executive order in the DOD guidance, it's for all the branches, so that's ultimately why this event could not happen. At Wednesday's press conference, multiple speakers cited other recent moves they cast as diminishing the service of military women. Sykes cited recent reports of Hegseth's intervention to block the promotion of three female Navy officers to one-star admiral, leaving no women on the promotions list. Kayla Williams, an Army veteran and former Department of Veterans Affairs official representing the Vet Voice Foundation, recalled Pentagon-driven directives that resulted in the services pulling down web pages honoring the achievements of women in uniform. Representative Chrissy Houlihan, Democrat of Pennsylvania, a former Air Force officer, noted that her grandparents were buried in Arlington National Cemetery, which made the cancellation of the wreath laying so painful. She said, I keep coming back to a simple question for President Trump and for Secretary Hegseth and my Republican colleagues, which is, when did saying thank you to women who served their country become a controversial statement? Women have answered every call this nation has asked of them, Houlihan continued. They have flown combat missions. They have commanded troops. They've cared for the wounded. They've gathered intelligence. And they've deployed into harm's way alongside their fellow service members. They did not ask for special treatment. They earned our respect. And honoring their service should never be viewed as a political statement. Now that's all for that article, but in light of that news, I thought I would read this spotlight story from military history. Hidden figure Gladys West, GPS pioneer and Navy civilian. Gladys May West, whose mathematical work became the integral foundation for modern GPS, passed away peacefully January 17, 2026, surrounded by family and friends. She was 95. Born in rural Dinwiddie County, Virginia in 1930, Wes sought to leave her family farm from the beginning, saying, quote, "I guess I found that a little bit contrary to what I had in my mind of where I wanted to go," she told to the BBC in 2018. For most living in the Jim Crow South, career options were limited, but West did not want to stay and pick tobacco, corn, or cotton for a living, or work in the nearby factory beating tobacco leaves into pieces for cigarettes and pipes. She is one of the hidden figures in American history. West's mind took her far from her life in rural Virginia. She told the BBC, "I thought at first I needed to go to the city. I thought that would get me out of the country and out of the fields. But then as I got more educated, I went into the higher grades, I learned that education was the thing to get me out." She was one of few female students to graduate Virginia State College with a degree in mathematics. West's genius secured her a position in 1956 at the Naval Support Facility Dahlgren, then known as the Naval Proving Ground. She was one of four black employees and only the second black woman hired at the facility. One of those black employees, Ira, would become her husband for more than 67 years before his passing in 2024. As a programmer for large-scale computers, and then a project manager for data processing systems used in the analysis of satellite data, according to the Royal Academy of Engineering, West began to analyze data from satellites, putting together altimeter models of the Earth's shape. West would serve as the project manager for the CSAT radar altimetry project, one of the first satellites that could remotely sense oceans, the Academy noted. West introduced innovations, cutting her team's processing time in half, and was recommended for a commendation in 1979. Throughout the 1980s, West was at the forefront of designing, developing, testing, and then programming an IBM 7030 stretch computer to deliver increasingly precise calculations to model the shape of the Earth, an ellipsoid with irregularities known as the geoid, according to the RAE. Her pioneering algorithms and subsequent data ultimately underpinned the mapping functions of modern-day GPS. While the mother of GPS, West once professed that she preferred a paper map to get around. Retired Navy Rear Admiral Sinclair Harris said during a 2023 ceremony honoring West, "I think that Dr. West is another one of those hidden figures in our military that play a critical role in the advancements that not only affected our ability to fire missiles accurately, but also enable everyday life when you pick up your phone and you're trying to find something." Despite West's non-peril accomplishments, it was only after Gwen James, a member of West's university sorority, read the short biography she had submitted for an alumni function in 2017 that the mathematician's contributions to the U.S. Navy and beyond came to light. Despite knowing one another for 15 years, James had no inkling of West's outsized impact. "GPS has changed the lives of everyone forever," James told the Freelance Star in 2018. "There is not a segment of this global society, military, auto industry, cell phone industry, social media, parents, NASA, etc., that does not utilize the global positioning system." West retired from the Naval facility in 1998 after more than 40 years of service, but she was not done. Despite suffering a debilitating stroke that affected her hearing, vision, balance, and mobility, West went on to earn her PhD from Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University at the age of 70. "All of a sudden," she recalled to BBC, "these words came into my head. You cannot stay in bed. You've got to get up from here and get your PhD." But getting up to quietly fight for success was nothing new for West, saying, quote, "We've made a lot of progress since when I came in, because now at least you can talk about things and be open a little more," West said regarding working women. But they still got to fight. Now we'll conclude with this article. First look at the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Design in Washington. The foundation overseeing the design of the future Global War on Terrorism Memorial on the National Mall in Washington has unveiled the first renderings of what the site will look like. Crafted by architect Kengo Kuma in partnership with the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation, the memorial's design is the culmination of 8 years of input from 20,000 Americans, including veterans, from every branch of service and every conflict since World War II, according to a foundation release. According to the memorial's description, visitors will first encounter steel and stone relics recovered from the 9/11 attacks at each of the site's three entrances, marking where the journey began, the release states. In a primary section coined The Embrace, a classically inspired amphitheater rises over the path below and features an arch made of reclaimed steel from the era's combat operations. The arch, which will also be adorned with native vegetation, is designed to filter light and will be oriented to align with Section 60 in Arlington National Cemetery, the resting place of roughly 1,000 service members killed in the post-9/11 wars. Below the arch, a predominantly marble path of honor includes embedded footprints that represent the weight of war and the varied experiences of those who served and their families, the release says. The path will also connect to adjacent memorials on the National Mall. Extending from the footprint paths are shallow reflecting pools in which visitors can dip their feet before stepping back onto the stone to leave footprints of their own, an interactive component that offers visitors the chance to walk alongside a loved one once more, the foundation says. The design was shaped by history and held sacred from the beginning, forged by sacrifice and informed by the voices of warriors and their families. Michael Rod Rodriguez, president and CEO of the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation and retired U.S. Army Green Beret, said in the release, "Throughout history, societies have built sacred places to welcome their warriors home, places where a grateful people can say, 'We see you, we honor you, you are not forgotten.'" Rodriguez added, "The GWOT generations deserve that same enduring tribute. Today, we take one step closer to welcoming them home." With approval, the foundation is aiming for a 2027 groundbreaking and a project completion date of late 2028. And with that, this concludes today's reading of the Military Times. I want to say thank you once again for tuning into Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your host signing out.